Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast, a podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today in the show, we've got the author of the great new book and one of my favorites this year, The Black Kids, Miss Christina Hammons-Reed. The Black Kids is a coming-of-age story of a well-to-do African-American teenager named Ashley, whose family gets caught up in the violence and turbulence of the 1992 Los Angeles riots. The story is based somewhat on her own experience growing up in Los Angeles around that time. And not only is this her debut novel, but The Black Kids has been optioned by the Gotham Group and will be a feature film directed by Rafiki Helmer Wanuri-Kehu with a script by Allison Davis. We'll talk about all of that and a whole lot more, including how incredibly relevant this book is to today's social upheaval. Remember, this is a spoiler discussion, so please, if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but please double back after you've read it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm very excited about today's guest because it's a book that I just fell in love with a few weeks ago, and I was instantly wanted to speak to her all about it. And the more you learn about not only the book, but the author, the more you're going to just fall in love with the entire thing. With me today is Christina Hammons-Reed. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. The book that we're talking about is called The Black Kids, and it is your debut book.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's crazy, right? And like, there seems to be, maybe it's just because, you know, maybe you just have to be people in books or not. I mean, every year there's debut novels, but there's been a lot lately, and there's been a lot of like, I mean, for obvious reasons, there's been some books that have been buzzier than others, and this has been buzzy now. And for this book with this subject matter to come out this year, I mean, like, can you give me some lottery numbers or something? Because like, or you've got some, you've got some
timing.
You've got some weird juju going on, right?
Because, I know.
I mean, and listen, I know you how these things work. You know, you wrote this probably started it at least a couple years ago, and you probably had the seeds of the idea much longer. Well, obviously you did because you. Well, that's the subject of the book, which we'll talk about, but it's amazing, right? I mean, like you couldn't, the fact that this book is to say it's timely doesn't even do it enough justice, does it?
No, it's crazy. It's, when I started writing it, I wanted to use the past to like look at our present. And I had no idea that we were actually going to be in this moment right now, but I think it's hopefully part of the larger conversation that's happening right now. But yes, it is an incredibly weird time for this book to have come out with everything.
It is part of the larger conversation that's going on right now. And a lot of authors I've spoken to recently, Black authors, I've asked them about, and I still haven't come up with a better way to put it, but the Black Lives Matter bump that a lot of Black authors are getting right now. And, you know, I'm a white dude, and it hurts to hear when they say, yeah, you know, definitely there was a couple of weeks where they felt it, but it's dropped off quite a bit. Not that they were surprised by that, but how has that been for you with this book? And not only just with what's going on politically, but even in the midst of a pandemic of all things too.
I think it's been, it's a really good question. I'm not sure how it's impacted me in terms of the sales, just since my book came out like a little bit past the main action of the protests. But in terms of the attention, I think it's been beneficial in that more people are paying attention.
Yeah.
So I want to say that hopefully more eyes are seeking it out than would have otherwise.
Right.
But I do think that can also be kind of a con for my particular book, because it's much more of a coming of age story. So if somebody's expecting something like along the lines of The Hate U Give or something, where there's a protagonist who's really sort of standing up in the face of very blatant injustice, this is much more kind of slice of life.
Right.
So I think it's definitely important to the conversation, because in a lot of ways, most of us are not going to be at the forefront of these kinds of things in terms of all of us are going about our lives while the George Floyd protests are happening or while the rioting is happening. And yes, we're engaging, but not everybody is going to be front and center. And I think that's kind of how Ashley is positioned in this world, where she's really trying to make sense of what's going on around her and what it means for her. So I think it's a good thing and a bad thing that it's coming out when it is. I mean, it can only be a good thing, right? It can only be a good thing to have more voices in the conversation. But I think...
And to your point, and like the similarities between 1992, what happened in 90, and what's happening now are, I mean, it's endless. But, you know, to your point, you know, the Black experience isn't a monolith. So even right now, like you said, there are people on the front lines protesting, and there are people that are not, and there are people where the current system or form of government is brutalizing them, and there's some that it's just not, right? I mean, there's so much different experience from state to state, city to city. Yeah. One of the things I loved about this book, and you mentioned Ashley, the wonderful main character in this book, for her to experience this idea that there is so many facets to being a Black person in America, we're experiencing it in real time with her. And that, I imagine, I was born in 1976, so 1992 was like my time. I was 16, you know, remembered all very well, which is, we'll talk about, especially some of the especially some of the references in the book, and particularly the music and all the bad white rap that I erased from memory.
Were you a Vanilla Ice fan?
I am proud to say that I was not a Vanilla Ice fan, but you couldn't escape it, right? You just mm-hmm. couldn't get away from it. But to your point, talk about that, you know, like, because the Black experience in America is so different and has so many points of view, and that really is what this book is about in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that was my intention in writing it, is just sort of examining that within Ashley's experience, because Ashley is a little different from a lot of the protagonists we see in fiction and on screen. She's a more privileged Black American who's kind of removed from the concerns of the inner city. And she's really what a lot of people would consider like the token best friend in a lot of friend groups. And in a lot of films, that's who she would be. In fact, that was one of the things I was thinking in constructing her, like she would be, for people who are familiar with Clueless, she's like the Dion in her friend group, or like those 90s teen movies, 80s teen movies, where there's the one Black kid. Mm-hmm. She is that Black kid. So what is that experience for her, moving through these very, very white spaces and not really feeling rooted within the community? And I think that's true of a lot of us who grew up in non-Black spaces, who are not necessarily part of a larger Black community just because of where we live or where we grew up in or the socioeconomic circumstances. So I wanted to explore her as a character, coming into her understanding of self, and what does that mean to then be part of community for somebody who hasn't had that up until this point, and who's been kind of isolated from the concerns of the larger community and also sheltered from the concerns of the larger community. So it's important to me that we have different voices that express different facets of the Black American experience, or just the Black experience in general.
Right.
And not just the inner city or the South or New York, that we have experiences beyond that, and that those are all interesting. But also just coming of age experiences, right? Like I love coming of age novels. So the fact that race factors into it is just one aspect of her coming of age.
Right. It's sort of like an empathetic YA novel in a lot of ways, right? Like it's a lot of YA novels are great because they explore a lot of first love, first, yeah, you know, finding yourself, all these things. But now you have this amidst a riot. So just to make the already torturous experience of high school even more difficult.
Exactly.
You must have had a great high school experience then, because mine was awful. But
No. But,
we'll get into. We're going to circle back on that, and before we get too far into the book, I would be remiss if I didn't say also congratulations. This book is being optioned for a film, and yes. I will take a little bit of credit before I even heard that it was optioned. I was reading it and was thinking this would make a fucking amazing film. Yes. And for a bunch of reasons. And number one, the soundtrack would kick ass.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to talk about Josephine probably more than we're going to talk about Ashley, just so you know, because I am team Josephine.
Yes.
And when she started playing the Hollies, The Air That I Breathe, on that beautiful scene you put together for their drive home, that's really the scene. I thought it was so cinematic. I think that's probably the first scene where I was like, man, this would make a great movie.
Really?
Yeah, that scene is so beautiful, and it's got such a cinematic quality, and you kind of let everything, the silence breathe, and the music comes on, and you can just picture them driving with that California coast. And
I think it's a testament to my film school background then, right? Like, it always kind of trickles in somehow.
For sure. And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask you about. First of all, I want to, we talk about the book, but I want to, if you can maybe give me the elevator version of that process of getting the book optioned, but also, yeah, you went to school for screenwriting and then you finally get a film from your book and you don't screenwrite it.
I know. It's kind of funny. Yeah, no, it's, it's,
and no offense to Allison Davis, but yeah, it's
sort of a weird. I think I'm happy to pass it along, I should say, because I've been kicking around this idea forever. Originally, I was thinking of it as a graduate thesis film when I was in grad school for film school, and then I decided not to do that. And then after taking a step back from film around 2016. I wrote it as a short story and it got published. And that's right. When my agent actually reached out to me and was like, are you maybe interested in developing this as a novel? And at the time I was like, I don't know. I kind of wrote it, I'm over it. But then when I thought about it more, I'm like, there's just so much more to mine and there's so much more to say. And especially as the sort of the 2010s got into full swing, we had the rise of smartphones. We had, a number of police brutality incidences that made their way to national headlines, and Black Lives Matter became more and more prominent. So it felt like it was more important as time went on to sort of explore what I wanted to explore with the book. That said, I wrote the book and I love the book, but I'm okay with passing it along to another person just so I can start on the next thing and kind of, I don't know, I do think it's exciting to see what somebody else will do with the world and with the characters and with their experience. So
right, and it's your baby though in a lot of ways. And
it is
when you factor in. I mean, you know, you were 8 years old in 1992. So I mean, you could look at it in a way that you've been writing this book since you were eight. in a way, right?
And right, in a way,
and geez, I've talked to, you know, enough authors to know that, I mean, these are deeply important. These are your babies, and you release them into the world, and that's a big enough deal.
It's true.
And so obviously you have a pretty good amount of trust with the people that are going to be adapting this.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Wanuri, who's going to direct it, I think is absolutely fabulous. She directed Rafiki, which came out in Kenya, and was banned because of the content. It features a lesbian love story, but she's just so talented that I sat down with her and I was like, okay, you get this. So I feel like it's in good hands. Otherwise I would not be like, okay, whatever. if I didn't feel that way, I think I'd be much more like, no, I'm going to write it. I have to write it. I have to direct it. I have to do whatever.
Right.
But
yeah,
I feel like it's in good hands, and I think that these super capable women are going to be able to sort of do something new and interesting with it.
That's so great to hear. Because I mean, now, like, because now I'm invested, right? So like, I'll be pissed if they screw this up.
Right, you're like, don't do it.
and this could be, how far along in the process are we with that? Are you allowed to say?
They're getting there. Okay. I don't know how much I'm allowed to spill the beans yet, though. But okay. It's happening. It's in progress. So hopefully sooner rather than later, we have something out into the world.
Normally the game, you know, we like to play in these things, and you've probably seen it done with other authors, is who would you cast in those roles? But this could be a moot point if they've already cast people in these roles.
Well, they're not that far.
Oh, they're not. Okay. Then have you ever thought about, do you play that game when you're writing? Some authors do, right? They sort of have somebody in mind.
Not even famous necessarily. Some people, like I know authors that just sort of go on Instagram or Pinterest and sort of like grab a face that next to them.
I don't quite do that as much just because I love when you discover a new face for a movie. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's like one of the best things when you get somebody brand new in the role and you kind of have the option of really making the character something new as opposed to whatever baggage, good or bad, comes with casting a famous person.
Right.
So for Ashley, I never really pictured anyone in particular. For LaShawn, I sometimes picture the late Lee Thompson Young. He passed away not too long ago, but mm-hmm. he went to USC with me and he was in Disney Channel movies, actually. He was in Disney Channel and what else was he in? What is that show? Rizzoli and Isles, but he just had this like very gentle, delicate spirit. And unfortunately he committed suicide. And I think something about him is in the character of LaShawn. Like, I didn't know him very well, but it's just sort of that sensitivity and that kind of golden boy, but with something underneath it all.
Right.
And for the parents, I feel like there's such a wealth of so many talented Black actors right now in terms of who could play their parents. Like, Sterling K. Brown could definitely be Ashley's dad, I think. For her mom.
He'd be a good Ronnie too, though.
He would. He would.
Yeah.
He absolutely would. Yeah, I'm trying to think of for her mom who would be good.
I know. The mom's key, Valerie.
Yeah. I think maybe Kerry Washington would be good. I think she has kind of.
See, now, the thing with now, whenever we pick somebody, we have to picture them in dancing or working out to Richard Simmons.
Right.
That scene,
high cut leotard.
That scene is so great. I love Valerie as a character. What a great, both, I mean, the parents are fantastic. That's the great thing. That's another thing too. Like, you know, one of the other reasons I thought I found this book to be so, you know, just sort of cinematic is the characters are so great and they're so well thought out. And so like you instantly get an idea of who they are. And that's important when you make a film, right? So
right, and that they're all very flawed. I wanted them all to be super. None of them is even remotely perfect. Except for maybe LaShawn. He's like the closest.
Very few of them are even likable, right?
Yeah, it's true.
No, LaShawn for sure. Harrison. I mean,
he's pretty likable. Yeah, he's pretty good.
And then of course a few of her, you know, the non Kimberly friends are all great, right? So
yeah.
But anyway, so yeah. So
but that's
anyways,
also just, being a teenager, right? Like you're kind of selfish and not the nicest sometimes.
Of course, and it's the thing, and that's the great thing about YA is that like as much as you hate Michael, you're like, well, we all knew a Michael probably, mm-hmm. right? So just sort of like, you know, the come on too strong.
Yeah.
type of dude, greasy guy. But anyway, just to put a pin in that, yeah, congrats on the option. I love that. I love it when, isn't it so great when a book that you love and it's in the right hands. It's just such, gives you a good feeling. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So yeah, like I said, you were 8 in 1992. So, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, other interviews, this is a deeply personal book to you because you were there, right? I mean, your experiences were not similar in a sense, but a lot of the book focuses on proximity.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the root of it. Like the distance is actually what's autobiographical for me.
Right.
Because like you said, I was only 8. So I was very young and mm-hmm. we were in the suburbs. So we were removed from the main action of the riots by far. But it really was about me trying to understand what I was watching on screen and what parents were whispering about and why people who look like me felt this way and were so angry and so upset and frustrated with things and how that connected to my experience, which it didn't particularly feel connected to my experience at all. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to explore Ashley in that same way. Like, what does it mean for her to then be removed, but also right there? Like, you can live just 5 miles from where there was a lot of rioting and be in like a super posh neighborhood.
Well, that's one thing you do a lot in the book too. You know, you're always reminding us where we are geographically. I notice a lot of times you're like, yeah, that's only 10 miles from my house. That's only 5 miles from this spot or 2 miles from this spot. And you're constantly telling us, yeah, like how, like you feel the heat from the fire, right? All that. So even more in the micro, that's the macro. The micro is for Ashley, there's the group of Black kids at her school. It's constantly on TV. Obviously everyone's watching the news. And even within her family dynamic, she's not even a generation away, like with Ronnie, her uncle, and Morgan being in the middle of the shit, right?
Like she's, right. Yeah, exactly.
So she's like, there isn't 6 degrees of separation here. There's barely 1 degree.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Was that kind of how you, looking back, is that sort of, was that your experience, do you think? Like, did you, you know, have a conversation with your parents maybe later on? And
no, actually, no. Like, it's kind of funny. It's, we didn't really talk about it until the book. But my parents, my dad was actually working downtown at the time. So he was commuting in and out of downtown. But I think for the most part, we didn't engage, probably just because we were so young. Like I was only 8,
right,
and my sister's younger. And I think for them, kind of like Ashley's parents do in the book, they really tried to shelter us as much as possible and give us as much of a childhood as possible without having to be weighted by the impact of all of these things. And I think it was easier to then. Like I think now you really can't with social media, with smartphones, with all of that. Like you can't look away even, I think, with a younger child. So, but back then they tried to protect us, and it was really just me coming into understanding it as I got older. And as I took, one of my majors in undergrad was political science. And so being at USC, which was kind of right in the thick of things at the time of the riots, and taking these classes about it and really sort of merging that experience of LA with my experience of LA, and also just sort of what does it mean to be a Black person in non-Black spaces at a time of heightened tension or heightened racial tension.
Right. And I mean, in all fairness to your beautiful parents, if they had let an 8-year-old go to the protest, they made the right choice.
Right, exactly. They're. Like, exactly.
I would have been like, huh? All right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They're like, go play in the backyard.
right. Probably the right call. And in that, like, and so in that sense, but like, again, to what's going on now, the past is a mirror to the present so much, God. And you know, I watched the documentary LA 92. I don't know if you've ever seen that documentary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did.
And, you know, it's one of the better ones out there, I think, is that covers 92 in a really in-depth way and really gets on the street and it really pairs with your book really well. I anyone out there, you should, if you haven't seen it, check it out for sure.
Yes.
It's really in-depth. It's really great. And I think it focuses on the right things as well, which is also important.
Yeah. And I think it's important to have like the context and understanding of how it gets to a moment as opposed to just reacting to the moment itself, like understanding everything that builds to it, right?
And we also forget the Korean aspect to it, mm-hmm. and like the play within the communities within themselves for the minorities. And it was so like, it wasn't just, you know, white on Black. Like there was a lot of shit going on in the communities themselves. And you're watching it, and I'll be goddamned if they don't show George Bush at some point, and goddamn fucking William Barr is sitting there with him.
Yes, yes.
And you're like, okay, yeah, so he's been an asshole forever. And
yes.
It's like, all right, I get that. And one of the things too is, you know, you start to, of course, you can't help but think about your own experience. And for me, at 16-year-old and living in Canada, and for most of the people, it was just something we watched on TV. Mm-hmm. We weren't close to it. And it dawned on me like how even, you know, reading your book and Ashley and your experience, as close as you were, there was still that separation.
Yeah.
And I wonder how long it was before you really understood, like, yes, you were, there was a, I guess, a bit of a buffer, but there was an inherent danger to being that close to what was going on.
I think I was a bit naive, and because we were so sheltered, I didn't quite feel it as much, but we definitely had experiences with negative interactions with police even growing up, just because we had like a nice car and so we would get pulled over for no reason. Like there were those kinds of experiences that definitely at a young age made me realize like these people do not equally protect and serve, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Even in the suburbs, right? Yeah, like we were in a suburb. It was where I grew up is just like a lovely little sort of sleepy place. But even within that context, it was decided that we didn't belong by law enforcement on more than one occasion. So I think aspects like that kind of factored into really looking deeper into the roots of that and how it connects to now.
Right.
Because we see the police brutality on people in theater cities. And that, I think, was kind of the narrative up until like maybe 2010, 2012 even. But we didn't see so much what that meant for suburban Black Americans or Black Americans outside of that context. And so when you see things like Sandra Bland pulling over, it's somebody with degrees and who presents herself in a certain way, or when you see some of these other things where you can't look away and say, oh, that just happens to these people who are doing the wrong thing. These things are happening. Or Ahmaud Arbery, where it's not police brutality but just sort of white vigilantism and determining that they don't believe he belongs there. Mm-hmm. You can't say, oh, it's just bad people these things happen to. It's part of a larger system.
And that's why Ashley's situation is so, you know, incredible in a lot of ways. And, you know, there's this sort of bubbling tension and you know she's only ever one mistake from being Black again, right?
Right.
And a lot of things, you know, you think it like you're not, you know, she quote the one quote, you know, you're not really Black or you're not Black. Right, like these ridiculous things that white people say. Yeah, like
yeah.
One of the things I want to talk about, but maybe we'll just do it now. And you know, you use the N-word sparingly, but obviously the most important time is the Kimberly interaction.
Yes.
What was that something that was in your head? I didn't read the short story. Apologies. So I don't even know if that scene was in the short story or not.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
It is. That's the climax of the short story.
Oh, it is. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And I promise you, I will go back and read it.
No, it's okay. Sure.
Okay. So that's the climax of that story. Okay. Yeah. Well, that'd be quite a climax. And cause it really knocks the wind out of you and you really feel it. So, okay, well then that kind of opens up another question. Then if that was the climax of the short, it's like, where do you go after that? Was that sort of like the main idea then when you sat down to do the novel? Was that sort of okay? After that word is out there now. I mean, you use the word in the book before, but not in a direct manner, right?
Yeah.
And certainly not, you know, there's that really great thing you do. It's like Ashley's history with the word.
Yeah,
and she, you know, recounts the half a dozen or so times when she's heard it before, but it's one thing when it's said, and it's one thing when it's said to you.
To you, yeah, exactly. And I think it was important to me as well that when it's said to her, it's weaponized within the context of Ashley hasn't been a saint, and this is something that Kimberly is saying because she's super angry at her for what she's done.
Right.
But what does it mean that that is the first word you go to in that context, right? Like that's kind of, I think it makes it more powerful. Like, what does it mean when your friend reaches for that word or somebody who has been in your life, your entire life reaches for that word in a moment of extreme passion, as opposed to just a stranger on the street or somebody who, in Heather's case, is just quoting John and Yoko.
And
so I think that was kind of important to me. Like, what does it mean in different contexts, and how does that kind of eviscerate Ashley in that moment in this new way?
And it's, I mean, it's essentially the worst thing you could say to her. Cause I mean, she could have chosen just to call her a stupid slut instead.
Right. Exactly.
which, you know, would have seemed more in line with, you know, sort of the her actions. And I'm not calling her a slut at all. She's not.
Right.
And I don't even think that word is a word. Like, I don't even understand.
No, it's a terrible, horrible word.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Right.
Like, so when you can't apply a word to both genders, then it's not a real word.
Exactly.
But in the, you know, the framework of high school, when we say ridiculous things, that would have made more sense. Yes. In context, but this is the most hurtful thing. And it's also like, we're not going to call Kimberly, are we calling her a racist?
Yeah.
Are we? Yeah. I'm comfortable. I think
we can call her that.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that's, you know, when you, you know, if that, you know, you're saying that to Ashley, that's the most hurtful thing you could say to her.
Yeah.
And I
think
they're very aware of the history of that word in 1992. This isn't
right. This isn't like 1950.
You don't even have to say the 1800s. You can be like, yeah, this isn't
1950.
This isn't 20 years prior. Yeah.
So I think with Kimberly too, and examining her racism, I wanted to do it within the context of, I mean, she's her friend. Like, she would not consider herself a racist person, as I think a lot of people would be like, I don't have a racist bone in my body, or I have black friends, or whatever. Right. And so Kimberly is exactly that. And what does it mean then? And Kimberly, hopefully at some point after the book, looks at herself and is like, wait, why was that the first word I went to in that instance? So I think it was important to me to show the nuance there as well. Like, Ashley's behavior is wrong, but Kimberly's response is wrong. And just kind of the gray area of that entire interaction, like, is Kimberly right to be upset? Yes. Why does she go and use that word? Because she's a racist. She's going to have to then look at herself moving forward. And then Ashley is also then forced to examine, what does it mean that I've been called this word by somebody who was, I considered my friend. And it's really kind of that moment also of her, she's been on this whole journey of connecting to her blackness. And I think that moment in and of itself is like a huge moment for her in realizing just how connected she is to her fellow black kids and to this community. And really is like one of the catalysts for her going off with LaShawn and really seeing the riots up close and personal.
And really forces her to, change. I mean, it's, I can't remember which adult says it. I think maybe it might be Maria that says it. You have to change the people you're hanging out with.
Yeah. And I think like Lucy is saying that the entire time, and she's just kind of ignoring her and she's like, oh, whatever. But yeah, I think that's kind of,
and she's,
we all do that as kids, right? Like, yeah, I think a lot of people, you don't realize that, like, hey, these people don't serve me.
And you made the brave and I think proper decision not to have them sort of like make up at the end or
no.
It's like, it's even and, right. And not that there's just not that she deserved it. There was nobody needed to be forgiven.
Right.
Some people would have went there we'll talk about the end of this book because I loved it. I thought it was perfect.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, it was like, that's how you end a book, right? You always got to, like, I'm one of these guys that liked the ending of The Sopranos. So
like, I do. That kind of like, it makes perfect sense to me, right?
Life goes
like
on, right?
Right, like, exactly.
We can't expect to, just because the cameras are turned off doesn't mean life doesn't go on.
Yeah.
One of the great things, so sort of the theme of this book, I'm going to just steal this from you. You said it in another interview. It's love of self, love of your people, love of your city. So, you know, like, LA is definitely a character in this book. Mm-hmm. Was that one of the things that was important to you? I have to assume.
Oh, yeah. Everything, because, definitely was.
Right, because we have that great, the great section where LaShawn just talks about the history of LA and who actually founded LA. And, you know, you describe even the palm trees and everything. And so that was very important to you to have that LA serve as an actual character in the book.
Yeah. And also because I think that LA, we get these like really stratified portrayals. You either see South LA or you see the glamour of like Hollywood, sure, Kardashian, LA, right?
Yep.
And these are all part of the same city. And in many instances, they're really, really, really close to each other, or if not on top of each other. So it was important to me to really look at all of the geographic, the ethnic, the religious diversity that exists in the city that we don't really see in other places. Like, I think there's so much beauty in this place that doesn't really get its due.
Right.
And just all the people that make this place up. Like, it's not just beach blondes playing volleyball, and it's not just Hollywood, and it's not just like some reductive Crips versus Bloods. Like, you have these beautiful people who are making their lives in South LA and just getting by, in the same way that you have people by the beach cities who are just getting by. Like, it's kind of all part of the same package, and I wanted to examine all of it together.
Yeah, and but at the same time, you know, you're not ignoring that there is a past, and it's often ugly. And one of the things that's funny about LA to me, and I've been there many times, nobody's from there.
It's true. It's kind of true. Yeah. I'm always very surprised when I meet another Angelina who's actually from here.
Yeah. It's a funny deal. But one of the things I love that you brought up, you know, the fact that, you know, the one part was a sundown town, something, mm-hmm. you know, something that people are now, thanks to Lovecraft Country, now all of a sudden it's, people are like, what's a sundown town? Like,
yeah.
Google it. And and also, and then you have that great connection with grandma, with Tulsa, which, you know, like, mm-hmm. the Watchmen, and what a great year it's been, yes, for TV.
I was gonna say, everything in TV this year is like found echoes in my novel, so I don't know, we're all kind of thinking about the same things, and it all came out this year, right
it is. And yeah, and
because Watchmen's the first time so many people knew about Tulsa, and it did so beautifully. I was like, oh my goodness.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, like, you couldn't accuse anybody of a coordinated effort, because
there's just all different sort of things.
And
different genres too, right?
Yeah. And for it to be the anniversary of Tulsa, mm-hmm. and, you know, we've got the 19th Amendment anniversary, and so you've got the women getting the right to vote coming in, yeah, even though black women took some time for
it's the 60s,
right?
It's crazy.
That's what some people are like, yeah, well, white women were allowed to vote, and then so anyways, this is all sort of getting towards, like, you know, like transitioning, something's changing, something's not changing, and that's sort of, mm-hmm. really that's the book, right? That's Ashley, where,
yeah,
when we start with Ashley at the beginning, she's, you know, having a pool party with her friends and having a great time, and by the end she has almost an entirely new group of friends, and she's looking at the world quite differently. And it's such a crazy time for teenagers, right? Because they're graduating, mm-hmm. they're going their separate ways in so many cases, and they're going off to college, and life changes in so many ways. And I'm just curious what, you know, this part of the ending of the book is about that. It's very, very hopeful in a lot of ways, for sure. And I'm just wondering, like, have you fanficked your fic with her? Have you thought about what Ashley, sort of where she ends up? What is she doing with her life? How much of what I know of Ashley now from this small chunk of time in her life, you know, what was the carryover? What was did it affect? Have you thought about?
I have. I think in Ashley moving forward becomes, I think Ashley's like joining the NAACP in college and the Black Student Union, and she's sort of correcting years of her high school experience and finding her peoples.
You think she's going full when she goes Josephine
to college?
Full
Josephine. I think she goes full Josephine. Maybe not full Josephine, but she goes much closer to Josephine than not within her college experience. So I think that it's a turning point for Ashley, for sure. I think in college is somewhere where, like, a lot of us who grew up in non-Black spaces actually find that sense of community when you sort of all go in. I mean, that's, I think, a lot of people, you kind of find your people in college or grad school.
Well, especially in an instance, in, you know, not LA, but maybe if you're coming from a town where there was maybe no people of color.
Right.
Exactly. Or very few anyways.
Very few, yeah.
Right? So
that's the funny thing. When I got to USC, that was, I think, the most Black people I'd ever been around.
Right.
And USC doesn't have that many Black people. I mean, it has them, but not compared to like an HBCU. So I think that there's kind of that community that
right.
you can find in that space.
Right. What was the biggest thing you wanted sort of to see change in Ashley? Like, what was the number one thing in your mind? Like, if you were checking boxes, what was the one thing that you really felt needed to impact her the most?
Well, that's a very good and difficult question. I think it was her understanding of self, because so much of her actions are just because she herself is lost. What happens with Michael is because she's lost and she's clinging to somebody. What happens with her parents or how she interacts with her parents is because she doesn't really know them. Like, that situation's kind of, once again, rooted in feeling disconnected. So for me, it was really her journey to feeling connected. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's her feeling connected by the end of the book. What does it mean to then have found like your community, to have found some sort of understanding with your parents, with your sister, with her uncle and her cousin, and sort of understanding their past even better. So I guess maybe to distill it into one thing would be like her journey from being disconnected to being connected.
And that's one of the things that she does, is she really does begin to understand and connect with her family like she never has before. She begins to understand where, you know, Craig and Valerie are coming from more and more as the book goes on. And also, though, as more is revealed, because they kept a lot from her to try and, you know, keep her in this bubble. And that's really, but that then there is the big connection to what's going on downtown, right?
Right.
We find out about the grandmother had the vacuum store, which Uncle Ronnie took it over. And Craig is sort of like distanced himself from all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a great, great, great scene with Valerie, her mom, where she talks about when they drove, she was on the bus and they drove by the first building she designed. And she was so proud of it. And they talk about how she was the first Black woman to do that at that company anyways. And the cards were, and then Ashley was like just too young to understand at the time.
Yeah.
But then when she hears that story again, it clicks.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was important in terms of history as well. Like I kind of weave it throughout the novel, but it's Ashley's uncovering of her own history, but also within the larger society, the riots are part of a shared history, part of a continuum of events that have happened over the course of the last bajillion years in this country. So like Tulsa is directly connected to 1992, is directly connected to George Floyd. Like all of these things are, they're not individual instances. They're part of this progressive struggle for rights, for humanity, against institutional and systemic racism. So in that scene, I wanted to connect the dots for Ashley, but also hopefully for readers in terms of understanding how we get to our current moment.
The vacuum store, was that seemed just oddly specific to me. Was that, did you come up with the idea for the business for the vacuum?
I wish I had put more thought into it so I could give a more thoughtful answer. But at the time of the writing, our vacuum had broken. And then, so I was like, vacuum broken, vacuum store, things that need to be fixed, things that clean, things that sort of erase what was there. So it was, all of it was generated by the fact that my shark vacuum had unceremoniously broken down. but then the metaphor seemed apt for what was going on. And right. also just, I think nowadays we're so inclined to toss something when it's broken.
Right.
Right. But what does it mean to then try to repair what's there? And I think that metaphor obviously works for the city and for her family relationships and all of it. Just what does it mean to try and like build towards something that works?
There you go. Inspiration is all around you. Right. Josephine. So I'm in love with Josephine. I see, if I you see any of myself in any character, it's her for sure. I love her bravado, that angst, that energy, and again, her taste in music is fantastic. I'm a big Bette Davis fan too.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. So we'll talk. Yeah, it's one of the things I want to talk about. Was your next project? Because my parents raised me on Motown, so I'm a huge R&B. Yes. I'm a huge R&B soul fan. So we'll talk about your next project here in a couple of minutes. But so I love Josephine's taste in men. of course I'm biased. I love her taste in music. I love her style. I love her she's so passionate about everything. And one of the things that I really loved was her relationship with her mom. Called her Valerie, never called her mom. Where'd Josephine come from?
I would say Joe's the most me out of anybody in the book. Joe is more me than Ashley in a lot of ways. Just sort of, she's got a lot going on emotionally. She has killer taste in music, I'd like to say.
Yep.
She is stubborn too. And I think that one of the things that I was interested in navigating is just sort of the difficulties and the beauties of mother and daughter relationships. That I think Joe and her mom are kind of pushing against each other in that way, but it's just because of a failure of both of them to understand each other. But also her passion. I am not as brave as Josephine is by any stretch of the imagination, but I wanted her to also serve as a foil for Ashley in terms of Ashley's so tentative and she's so unsure of herself throughout the entire text, and Joe is she is also unsure of herself, but it takes a very different form, right? Like it's the form it takes is one that I think maybe some people understand a little bit more, is like kind of that anger and that this is not right, this is not how things should be. So Joe,
like the will to act.
Right. And right? I think that that's important. So Joe, I don't know. Joe, I would say, is definitely more me than Ashley. Yeah. But Ashley's concerns were my concerns at her age without being Ashley at all. I was so not Ashley. I was a very, very nerdy, sweet child.
Right. One of the things too that comes up with, specifically with Josephine and how we end with her in the book, she ends in a precarious position. Mm-hmm. Really highlights, disadvantages that Black people have, especially within the court system. Mm-hmm. Because if she wasn't Black, she probably wouldn't have ended up where she did. Right. And she even had the help of an aunt mm-hmm. who was a judge and had gotten them out of trouble previously. But couldn't this time because the white cards were stacked against them, just too many. So
exactly.
And that's will forever change, of course, Josephine.
Her trajectory.
Yeah. Just like that. And she didn't even do anything, right?
Wrong place, wrong time.
And it just made me think, it makes you think about not only then, but now, it's still happening quite a bit and it must have happened mm-hmm. quite a lot. And I know you talked to a lot of different people for this book, right? That were different mm-hmm. different ages at that time. And is that sort mm-hmm. of what, like, did you hear any specific stories like that of people's life, their path changing because of something that they may have done or not even done, just been the wrong place at the wrong time during that time? Was that, I'm wondering if that was a specific story that you heard.
Not that specifically. I think I've said in interviews that I read a lot of news accounts, and then Twilight by Anna Deavere Smith is this one woman play that takes mm-hmm. a lot of different perspectives in the moments leading up to and including the riots. And what that looked like on the ground for people who were there. But with Joe, what I wanted to explore specifically was, like you said, how does the system not serve everybody equally? Like, okay, once again, we have this privileged girl, as much as Joe wants to kind of reject that, she is still coming from a privileged place of having an aunt as a judge and parents who can afford good lawyers and blah, 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 blah. But then when it comes down to the legal system, she is still at the mercy of courts that are influenced by systemic and institutional racism. So her opportunity or lack thereof is informed by that institutional racism. And so it was just another angle on looking at privilege and people who, I think there are a lot of people who up until recently would say, oh, it's not a matter of race, it's a matter of class. It's just that it's not racism, it's classism that we're experiencing now in the 2010s, 2020s. And that was my way of kind of rejecting that wholeheartedly, that no, these things are all connected. Like, you can't just say it's just race, it's just class. Even from a privileged perspective, she is then going into the prison system and her life will be forever changed by that because of just being in the wrong place at the wrong time and not having the right skin color to kind of get away with it.
Right. I fanficked it in my head. Harrison's waiting for her when she comes out with flowers. And anyways, and again, another, like, you know, and get, for lack of a better word, brave, you know, good decision to stick with that too, right? Because I mean, a lot of, you know, I guess a lot of people would have had her get off with maybe light or something, but no, she's got to face the music. And
yeah,
and it's not fair at all, not at all, but probably pretty freaking accurate to what was happening and still happens right. a lot of the time, right?
Yeah. And I think even now we're seeing a lot of activists who are now going to have records or
yes,
just these things in their files now moving forward, which right. is unfair and unfortunate. And meanwhile, we have the police who killed Breonna Taylor out and about. So
enjoying something, a hamburger right now.
Right. Exactly.
For basic freedoms, which, yeah. Right. Yeah. Which, so it's been a bit, it seems a little dire, but the book does end on a somewhat hopeful manner. I think, I mean, if Ashley's eyes were literally bloodshot at the beginning of the book, by the end they are. And I'm not one to judge. Let's put it that way. they are clear and wide open by the end anyways. Yes. And it's, you can't help but see the metaphor and the parallels to the very ending, you know, building sandcastle. Like, so the day or two that followed the riots in LA, you had, you know, different people from different backgrounds coming together to rebuild the city. And
yes,
you literally have that with her new friends at the end, building, all chipping in to build sandcastles. And they're all different. You know, at that point there's, Lana's there, who's a great character too. We didn't even have time to talk about her, but then LaShawn is there. And there's a really cute little moment between her and LaShawn in shorts. That's all I'll say. And then of course the two friends that aren't racist, you know, right. that she kept around. So you definitely, it ends on, you know, it just ends and life goes on and you end before you get to the summer. Well, the summer just sort of started, I guess, but how did you end it? Was that how you thought of you were going to end it? Did that sort of organically come about as you wrote? What was the deal with the ending?
Yeah, the ending was, it was definitely always that scene at the beach was always the ending. There were different roads that got to there, but that was always the ending that I was writing towards. And I think it's because as much as we have these really stressful moments where we're forced to really examine ourselves, I personally believe in the hopefulness of all of these things building upon what's come before as we try to build a better future. So maybe the future doesn't come as quickly as we'd like it to, and there's too much that's happening that shouldn't be happening, but there is always progress. So even if we take two steps forward, one step back, and independently of what's going on nationally or politically, within people there can always be progress, right? Like Ashley is changing, her friends are changing, and I think it's important to me that the young people are the ones who are starting to build towards that future, because I think that's always the case. It's always young people who are leading the charge for change, and even now Gen Z is incredible in their political activism and their diversity and inclusiveness. So I think it was important to me to showcase the fact that these young people are coming together, they are hurtling towards adulthood, and yet they're trying to do something as cute and kind of childish as building a sandcastle, but all pitching in together in a meaningful way. So that was the metaphor.
Right. Which and yeah, it was, but it's a good metaphor. And
yeah.
And like I said, you definitely feel like Ashley is she's changed, and she seems to be like surrounding herself with the right people and headed in the right direction. That's for sure.
I think so.
So
he'll be okay.
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Hopefully.
who knows? It was 20 years ago.
I know. I mean, Ashley's, for all we know.
Ashley is, I mean, geez, she's my age. Yeah, right? She's 45 or whatever.
Yeah. She's probably like got a full on adult life and career and maybe a family. And
so we've just scratched the surface. This book is full of great, great themes, great moments, really great moments, some scary moments too. I mean, you really take them into the belly of the beast a couple of times and there's some really, she's confronted with violence and police brutality and how the system is tips the scales in the opposite direction of how it should be. And you, there's a ton of great characters in this book. We haven't even talked about like the MAGA neighbors. those two crazy friggin' boys. So, oh God, the brothers.
Pre-MAGA neighbors.
I guess it's not even MAGA then. They're marching today for sure. Those people, but on the wrong side.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're with the Proud Boys or whatever.
Yeah, they definitely are. They're those two out with the guns in that one mansion.
Oh where yeah,
they're exactly that, right?
Oh, like, I heard. Did I read they're going to be speaking at the?
Yes.
Yes. God. Between who? Like Scott Baio and Ted Nugent, I guess. I don't know.
And what does that mean that these are the people you want to showcase? Like, what are we saying here? Come on, guys.
It truly is embarrassing to be white. I'm just going to say. Yeah. It really is. It's just like, come on.
Come on, right? Like, what is going on here?
When you can't even license any music, you know you're in bad shape, right? Like,
right, exactly. When everybody's like, please don't play us. Yeah. No, thank you.
Artists who will need money in a lot of cases, right? Won't even let you use their work.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Let's talk about what's next. So I read, I'll let you just sort of describe it as much as you're allowed to at this point, but it sounds something that's really up my, like I said, I grew up listening to Motown. I'm a huge fan. Tell me what you can about the next book. Does it have a title? What are we going?
So it doesn't have a title yet, and okay. It's going to be an adult novel that I am slowly chugging away at, but it is going to be the story of a family who is trying to be kind of like a Jackson 5, and it's really just looking at what that version of the American dream looks like, and what does it look like when, in a lot of ways, music was one of the paths to the American dream for Black Americans of a certain era, and also just family and brotherhood and sibling rivalry, and I'm always very interested in how families build each other up and fail each other.
Are they all in, like the dad's the manager, like,
yes,
the
whole, exactly,
the whole thing? Okay.
Yeah, the yeah. dad's the manager, and it's three boys, and it's really kind of like an intergenerational, well, I guess you want to call it intergenerational, but one of these sagas that takes place over decades of trying to see this family make it, and what does it mean when they do or do not, and also kind of a bit of the supernatural in there as well.
Cool. That sounds
so cool. Yeah. We'll see if I pull it off.
Well, you have to now.
I know. Now that I've announced it, I have to actually do it.
Is it too early? Is there any like release dates? Do you have any?
Oh, no. Yeah. No, not yet. Not yet. Okay. I'm not going to pressure myself like that.
Right on. No. Well, the sophomore, that's a big one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, especially since I'm trying something completely different than YA. So
right.
We'll see. I actually had this kicking around at the same time as expanding the Black kids into the novel. So
okay.
I'm excited to get back to it.
Perfect. Well, it sounds great. It already sounded great. Then you threw Supernatural in the mix and now I'm just like, I'm in 100%. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for that. So the Black Kids is out. Where would you like people to buy it? Cause we don't want to give that scary bald dude any more money if we don't have to.
I I would like people to buy it from their local indies. I think support your local booksellers, especially since they've been so hard hit during this pandemic.
Okay.
As much as you can, seek out retailers nearby and support them. And
if anyone's struggling with that, bookshop.org is a great website to go to, and they sort of like are a broker, I guess, for indie bookstores. Yeah. But if everyone looks hard enough, everyone's got an indie or used bookstore in their town, and you could probably get your hands on this book other than ordering it from, the scary villain.
Exactly.
Right. I can't thank you enough. I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
I don't say things I don't mean. I don't, like, life's too short for bullshit. I really did enjoy this book quite a bit. I really like this book, and I'm so happy it's going to be made into a film, and I'm so happy that it sounds like you're giving the blessing on the people they've hired to bring this to life, and that gives me the warm and fuzzies for sure.
The soundtrack will be killer, as you said.
The soundtrack is going to be amazing. I can't wait for the soundtrack. and also, I mean, what's great is, you know, this is going to come around again for you with this book too, right? I mean,
yes.
You know, the best part about releasing a book is you get to go out there and people line up to see you and they tell you how great you are and how the book has changed their life or in this way or that way. And they get to, you know, your ego just gets this constant, you know, inflating and massaging, and that's okay. And that's great because you've earned it. And that's, and so many of these authors and now you include have been robbed of that.
The hardest part about it when you really want to like connect to people and instead you're on your computer.
and these, you know, all the virtual events that are going on are nice, but you know, there's been some stuff going on lately that disturbs me with some of these online events, you know, especially the one the other day with Danielle Clayton, which is...
Yes, I just read about that.
Oh, God.
Disgusting.
It fucking makes me so
And it's
mad.
A second time it's happened to her.
I know. We've got to figure this security thing out for women of color, because they can't be putting up with that nonsense. And that's all it is pure nonsense. But so anyways, the point is, when the movie comes out, you know, this will circle back on you and you'll get to maybe get out there and do some press and meet some people and have people tell you face to face how important it is to them and how much they love this book. And because you and all the other authors deserve it. And I mean, not the authors that write hate speech and not that guys. yeah, not those dudes, not those white guys, but all the good, fun, beautiful authors in the world who write great, inspiring things deserve to get their egos stroked. So hopefully when this movie comes out, that's my wish, is that it comes back around on you in a great way and you get to get out there and have people tell you how great it is, because it is great.
Thank you so much, Steve. I hope so.
There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. A huge thanks to Christina for taking time out of her busy day to speak with me. Personally, it was a huge thrill. I'm such a fan of this book, and now I'm a huge fan of hers. She's wonderful to talk to and genuinely seems like a great person who happens to have great taste in music. What's not to like? You can find her on Instagram at Christina Hammonds Read, and of course The Black Kids is available now, so please head over to bookshop.org and order one today or wherever you buy your books. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen. Head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Bye for now. My time is coming, it's time to go now.